Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Today's episode is brought to you by the folks over at SeatGeek, the best and easiest to use ticket platform out there. They take the confusion out of buying tickets using a 0 to 10 scoring system and a green is good, red is bad color rating system so you and your loved ones get the best deal possible. So whether it's going to see our beloved Red Legs at Great American Ballpark, the Bengals over at Paycor, FC Cincinnati, one of the area college teams, or pretty much anything in between, use promo code RIVERFRONT at checkout and receive $20 off your first order. Click the link in the show notes to download the app and get started. That's Riverfront, one word, for $20 off.
What is up, everybody? This is the Bengals Show presented by the Riverfront. We're back. Sorry, last week I didn't have an episode. I was sick. I was dying from, I don't know, COVID pneumonia. I don't know, but I just felt like crap. Wasn't able to get an episode up. So I apologize. I know our 25 loyal, intrepid viewers missed this last week, but fear not. We're back. We're not going anywhere. So I'm your host, Joe Farsing. Alongside me, Greg Neiman. Greg, how are you?
Happy Fantastic.
Happy Valentine's Day to you. It's Valentine's Day as we record this.
That's right. Happy Valentine's Day. I'm doing pretty good other than Sunday. That was tough to watch.
Yeah, we'll get into that here in just a quick second here. As always, if you guys are watching on YouTube, like, subscribe, all that fun stuff. Go to riverfrontcincy.com for our excellent, excellent, excellent Riverfront U coverage of local colleges. You guys are listening to us on any of the audio feeds, we'd appreciate any 5-star rating. Outside of that, we will get into Super Bowl 58 right now. Okay, that's enough of that shit. Chiefs win in overtime, 25-22. Was this a classic? I don't know how to categorize this. This was a weird, like, the game had weird flows. It went almost 5 full quarters. I mean, it was pretty much the last play of an entire overtime period. Is this a classic game or is this a game that just was a close game? I don't know how to categorize this.
I don't really feel like it was a classic game. Now, maybe that's my, you know, hatred for the Chiefs, but it was a good game. It was a great game. I don't know. It felt like this was the definition of this entire season. I didn't think either team really played that well. I didn't think either team looked like necessarily like a deserving Super Bowl champion. I didn't think anybody was dominant. It just reminded me of the season. I thought it was kind of really incomplete, not very sound, and kind of was what it was. I wasn't overly impressed. It was a really weird Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, it was sloppy. San Francisco, I still believe, was the better team, but they made mistakes. I mean, first drive of the game, CMC, I mean, they're at the inside the 30-yard line, and he fumbles on a, like, it wasn't even a hard hit. It wasn't even like they were absolutely ripping the ball out. They just knocked it loose. They missed an extra point. They muffed a punt, and At first glance, I was wondering, like, what the hell is McLeod doing? Because all of a sudden, he just goes running after the punt. But he saw that one of his blockers, like, it hit his heel or it hit his calf or something. So good job, you know, good awareness on him to try to pick it up, but he wasn't able to corral it. And the very next play, Chiefs threw a touchdown pass, and that, you know, that pretty much made, you know, brought the game back into, like, from the dead, for that matter, because it kind of become a punt fest. Apparently the 49ers didn't understand the overtime rules.
Yeah, I mean, that is mind-boggling.
It's weird, like, I don't understand the point of there actually being quarters in overtime. Like, it just seems pretty simple. It's just going to be untimed. Like, why is there an actual running clock? Like, you run this play clock.
Right.
But outside of that, it's simple. I mean, each team gets a possession unless there's a defensive score. And if both teams match scores, then it's sudden death. Like, that's
right.
Why even have quarters? That just seems adding unnecessarily conflict. And, again, all of this because the Chiefs were able to drive 13 seconds against the Bills a couple years ago and then won the game in overtime without any the Bills getting the ball. But you're just creating problems when it wasn't that big of an issue to begin with. Just go to college overtime rules. I like that so much better anyway.
I agree.
And also, can we get rid of the kickoff? Every kickoff went, like, none of the kickoffs even landed in the end zone. They all ended past the end line. And it's like, why are we doing this?
There wasn't one that was returned, I don't believe. The crazy part about the overtime, though, Shanahan, I knew he messed up right away. I was sitting there yelling at the TV. I'm like, why would you take the ball? Because now in playoffs, it's essentially, in some forms, it is kind of college. Because everybody's going to get the ball.
At least to begin with, yeah.
Yeah, to begin with. So when they took the ball first, I knew that was a grave mistake. Because if you take the ball second, if Kansas City goes and gets a touchdown, now you know you're going to go for it every fourth down. I mean, that was a huge mistake. I thought Shanahan really cost San Fran the game with his play calling. They stopped running the ball with McCaffrey. I thought he was very conservative at times. I thought San Fran's defense was very conservative. Honestly, I give the most credit to Andy Reid. I thought, you know, his team was prepared. And then all this stuff about, you know, Mahomes, Super Bowl MVP, all that. Mahomes was a game manager. That's all he was. I mean, and that's not a shot. He did a great job at being a game manager. But he threw one ball that was, you know, down the field. Threw one ball vertically. And it should have been intercepted if the safety on the camera side of the field, if he had any idea what he was doing, it was the easiest interception of all time. Yeah, it was a terrible throw.
Yeah.
So, he gets MVP, but I don't know if he deserves it. I don't think he played better than anybody else on the field.
Yeah, and that goes in there. Like, Pat won MVP and deserve it. I don't know who else to get it. No one was dominant. Like, nobody was bad.
Yeah,
but I mean, Pacheco had 59 yards on the ground. I mean, Kelce, very efficient, like he was, you know, like he's been all playoffs. 10 targets, 9 receptions. I really wish that he would have been 10 for 10, because if Kansas City was going to win, like, I didn't want them to, but I thought they would. I had money on them. I had them the money line, and I had a anytime touchdown with Kelce. So when they threw it to him at, was it first down or second down, when they were down by the goal regulation, threw it a little short of him in the end zone. Mm-hmm. And I would have had a nice.
That would have been a good one, yeah.
It was 20-1, I think. It was plus 2,000. So that would have been quite nice. So I would have been happy if he was 10 for 10 on catches and receptions. But even that, I mean, that would have been 10 catches for 97 yards and the touchdown. Like, is he getting the MVP for that? So I guess Mahomes kind of had to by default. I mean, he completed almost 3/4 of his passes. Again, good, not great. The one interception that he threw was poor. Should have thrown another, but I don't know. Quarterbacks get all the awards.
Especially if your name's Mahomes.
You get all the flowers.
Then you get all the love.
Last thing we really want to get into here, are the Chiefs a dynasty? I mean, as Bengals fans, we're going to say no, that, you know, because they just haven't been challenged by teams that don't shit the bed. And let's be honest. Kyle Shanahan is developing a reputation for shitting the bed now. Are they a dynasty? Like, they kind of are. I mean, 3 titles in 4 years in this era.
Yeah, I mean, I think just strictly based on the titles, they have to be. The beauty of this is I think we're going to see the downfall of the Chiefs swiftly. Swiftly. I really don't think the Chiefs were a top five team this year. I don't see it. San Fran was better. Baltimore was better. Both teams decided to stop running the ball. I think those teams' coaches cost them. I have no idea. I cannot figure it out. Maybe it was for the millions of views for Swifties in the Super Bowl, but I don't know. I just don't see the Chiefs. I really don't. Travis Kelce's getting older. I just don't see what their defense is really good, but I just don't see where they go from here that they're going to continue to be able to compete in the AFC, because the difference between being the best in the AFC and being seventh or eighth is nothing. The AFC is going to be very solid for a while. And I think the Chiefs are going to be on the wrong end of that. I think Andy Reid's close to retirement. I think Travis Kelce's close to retirement. When Andy Reid goes, it'll be laughable that people thought Mahomes was one of the best of all time. Like, he's good. He's great. He's not one of the best of all time. He was a game manager this entire year. The credit he gets is overblown. I just don't see it.
It's crazy this entire year how much they were inefficient. I mean, their offense, I don't have it looked up to where they were in terms of points per drive, average yards gain, stuff like that. But Butker, like, what was he, like 41 of 43 for field goals or something crazy?
I want to say he missed one, but I got ESPN pulled up right here. So give me 2 seconds and I'll have this looked up.
Sure, but like, all season long against the Bengals, all they did were kick field goals. They had one touchdown and five field goals, six field goals. Four field goals on Sunday, and that you know, outside of one touchdown until the very last seconds of fifth period, you know, of overtime. Now, I'm a little more optimistic because screw them, but I think the Chiefs, they have a good enough, like, they've got a good general manager. They've got a good player personnel crew. I think this was the bottoming out as it was. Like, if they were able to win this year, because they didn't have a ton of offensive talent, and they still won, and they're going to be able to go out and get some more in this coming season. I mean, this is a very wide receiver heavy draft. There's, you know, a handful of them that are available. So I think they're going to be able to improve that, unfortunately.
Field goals, 33 of 35 in the regular season and 11-11 in the postseason. So combined, he was 44 of 46 for the year.
Okay. So he was 41 of 43. I'd heard that during the game. So that must have been after his first one of the game. So, but yeah, I mean, they were just I mean, they couldn't score in the second halves of games. And like, this is the one year that you look at that's like, yeah, the Bengals had a terrible defense, like 31st ranked defense, every metric, you know, run, pass, point, you know, points against, points per drive, things like that. It was a bad defense, but they were 8-9, and they had or 9-8, and they had a healthy Joe Burrow for 4 weeks. We'll say 5 weeks. They were 4-1, and that loss was one where Tyler Boyd dropped a touchdown that would have given them the lead.
His easiest catch of the year, for sure.
Exactly. And not that the playoffs would have been easy. You know, I mean, it still would have been a struggle. The defense still bad. You're playing teams that are, you know, that, again, this is why Burrow hasn't had great stats in the playoffs, because you're facing better defenses, better pass rushes. And, you know, but this is the year that, you know, that the Bengals, even with them being flawed, they could have won the fucking Super Bowl this year. And it's like,
I think either of the years that Cincinnati was in the AFC Championship, you take that team, you put that team in this year's NFL, it's the best team in the NFL. And that same goes for those Chiefs teams they played in those AFC Championships. Those Chiefs teams are 21 points better than anybody in the NFL this year. in my opinion. I just don't see – I thought this was a really weak NFL. Even watching this Super Bowl, it felt like watching two JV high school football teams, and the only difference in the game was the head coach on the Chiefs' side was just better. And that's really what I saw. He won the game. Andy Reid won the game.
Yeah, and it's just frustrating because there were a bunch of good teams. You could legitimately say, I mean, I guess the Niners were the only team that was championship caliber on the NFC side. I think Lions are still a year away. I'm curious about where the Lions go from here because Jared Goff has been really good the past 2 years, but Jared Goff has been really good before, and he's been really mediocre David Carr level for a few, you know. What are they going to be? I mean, obviously, they're not going to upgrade a quarterback. They can't upgrade a quarterback because they're going to be drafting towards the end of the round, and there's not that huge free agent out there. That there's not some guy who's going to upgrade that position for him. So are they going to be kind of stuck in Andy Dalton, you know, early 2010s version for the Bengals? But there were five or six teams in the AFC that could have, you know, basically every team in the playoffs swap out the Bengals for the Steelers. Any of those teams, I think, could have won the Super Bowl this year. There just wasn't a dominant team. So I think next year, I mean, this is why this offseason is so important for the Bengals, because obviously teams are going to get better. Yeah, teams are going to get worse, but somebody's going to take that step up. I think that the Chiefs are going to have a much better team on paper going into 2024 than they did this year. Again, we'll see. I mean, there's a lot to be done, and that's why I think it's stupid. The Athletic put out their power rankings, early power rankings for 2024, and it's like, why? All you have to do is just number one Chiefs, number two Niners, and then you put the Ravens and the Lions at 3 and 4, and then, you know, from where they finished in the playoffs and then rank the rest of the teams that weren't in the playoffs. It's like, well, what's the point of this? Because you have free agency. You have all these draft cuts. You have cap cuts. You have free agency, like, plus players get, you know, players improve, players degrade. Like, what's the point of coming out with that right now when you don't know what the teams are going to look like?
Yeah, that's about as meaningless as it gets, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, it's teeth on a board. Like, why are we even wasting our time on this? So, like, you look at them, and they had the Bengals at 10 and put something about, like, you know, about how bad the defense – like, I'm like, why am I even reading this and getting annoyed by what it's saying? Like, it means nothing, so.
That's a big guess is what that is.
Yeah, it's like you're just filling space so you can say you have a column.
Yeah.
Good job to your editor for doing that. So that puts a bow on the 2023 – season. Thank God. This was just so long.
I know. So thank you.
Depressing. This was the, I mean, again, Bengals were in postseason contention until the end of week 17. Mm-hmm. And it just, as soon as Burrow got hurt, we're kind of just like, can we just get the season over with? Like, we still have 7 weeks. Can we just hit the simulation button? Like, this is Madden or something, and just skip ahead to the postseason, you know?
I will say, at least Jake Browning gave us a couple pretty entertaining weeks where, you know, not that you ever got your hopes up to think like, hey, we're about to do something crazy, but at least the games were entertaining. You know, there was some – it was good watches, you know.
Yeah, and you have confidence that, you know, again, I mean, Burrow's spent have two out of his four starting seasons on injured reserve. And this narrative out there that he's injury prone, I don't think is, you know, correct at all. He's had two – serious injuries, and he had the calf injury, which was just a nagging one that he got over with. But if something were to happen in the middle of the season that Burrow would miss a month, like, you're confident that Browning could go 2-2 or at worst 1-3 and hold the fourth down. It's one thing to have to start the entire back half of the season against, you know, all playoff teams, but it's nice to have that confidence and actual proof that it happened. So, but we are now officially into the offseason. Quick bit of news. AJ McCarron was released today. So long. Welcome back to the USXFL, AFL, whatever the hell the spring league is. I'm sure St. Louis will welcome him back with open arms, I guess.
I mean, I don't know. We'll see in March, I guess. I don't know. Somebody will see. It won't be me, but somebody will see.
Exactly. I wish all those luck that are going to watch that. So I'm too big of a fan of other things going on. Like in March, you've got NCAA tournament and baseball. Yeah. Like I'm not just a football fan. Like I'm not going to watch crappy football for the sake of it. So
yeah.
Off-season dates to know on starting February 20th until March 5th. It opens up the time period to be able to place franchise tags and transition tags on your free agents. So expect T to get tagged. Paul Danner Jr. at The Athletic has a really cool kind of series out this week. It's a four-parter taking a look at the decision of what to do with T. Higgins. Obviously, I mean, there are four options of what will happen between now and the beginning of the season. One is just to let him go as a free agent going into this year, which obviously that's not happening. Other option is tagging him going into this season, which we all expect to do, and then play the season on a tag. I think that's probably the most likely of all of the alternatives. Other option is tag and trade. There's a very strong feeling, and I'm of this feeling, that that's probably the smartest for the franchise. That's the smartest move to make. But you know, we shall see. And the fourth is tagging him and then working out a long-term deal. I don't see that happening. I think least likely is he's going to they're just going to let him walk. There's no chance in that. Second least likely is them actually working out a long-term deal.
Yeah, I think we're on the exact same page. I think the best thing for the Bengals would be to, you know, tag him and trade him. But I don't know that I think that that's the most likely thing either. I think tag and play out the tag is the most likely scenario.
Yeah. Now he did have some really cool stats in today's, which was kind of the injury basically his availability. I mean, he's missed a decent amount. It's like somewhere around 70% of snaps in over his four seasons that he's been available. But this year, when Chase, Burrow, and Higgins were healthy, their numbers, like, for the team, and it was only, I think, 191 snaps, was crazy. They were the most, in terms of yards per play, number one in the league, 6.6, which was ahead of San Francisco at 6.5. Success rate, 53.7%, number one in the league, ahead of San Francisco. Expected points, you know, EPA per play, 0.14, which is second behind San Francisco's 0.15. Sack rate. We talk about Burrow, you know, how often Burrow gets hit. Sack rate was 3.3% for the season, which would have ranked first, like the least amount of sacks per play of any team in the league. Average net yards per attempt, 7.18, second in the league behind San Francisco. Yards per rush. Again, we're talking passing game. Yards per rush, 5.2 yards per rush.
Wow.
Number one in the league ahead of Miami for the entire season of 5.0. So the offense hums with Higgins.
That's so impressive.
And they're actually, the offense is better. Like if Chase is out versus when Higgins is out, if it's just one of the two of those, Bengals offense actually runs better with Higgins and no Chase than Chase and no Higgins. I'm not sure, like that. I don't know why that is. I mean, Chase is clearly the better, the better receiver, but
yeah.
I don't know if it's more of just they're better at spreading the offense out when Chase is there instead of, no, Higgins, you're just going to keep force feeding him, which honestly I'm cool with that idea. He's your best playmaker, force feed him. But a lot of things to think about, and that's why Higgins will be back. I think for the Bengals in 2025, 26, 27, the best for them to do would be to tag and trade him this year. They're getting, like, I didn't think it would happen, but they'd get a first-round pick plus a day-three pick this year if they were to do that. And that plugs a couple holes. You can get offense and defensive line with a premium pick. And then, go into round two and get another wide receiver. It's a deep wide receiver draft. But I think they're looking at it as 2024 is the last year before Burrow's cap hit goes up. It's going to be somewhere in the 20s. It's going to go up to 46 in 2025. Chase is still going to be affordable, even if he's just on the fifth-year option. For 24 and 25, he's not going to have a huge deal. I can save that money, and or they still have whatever. If they tag him, it'll be $35 million in cap room plus, you know, there'll be some cap casualties. Again, I don't know what the best thing. I mean, if they hang on to him this year, then you know, then you're kind of looking at, hey, they might actually be going all in for a year, which they've yet to do, and I'm all for. If they want to manipulate the cap, which they have yet to really do, which isn't really hard. Teams do it all the time. If they were to do that and kind of go all in and then retool after this year when you know you're going to need a new wide receiver, cool, I'm all for it.
Yeah. I was just thinking here and I'm, you know, looking stuff up and I'm thinking, you know, if you could find a way to leverage T for more than what his value actually is. And to me, I think you have to find a couple things. A, you got to find a team that is wide receiver hungry, obviously. B, you got to find somebody that values T. Higgins maybe more than other people. And the team that comes to my mind is the Tennessee Titans. I mean, it just makes too much sense to me. If you can franchise T and find a way to work out a trade with Tennessee and maybe Jeffrey Simmons comes back in return. I mean, and now you're filling out your D line. To me, it makes a lot of sense. You know, Callahan's going to want the offense to work in Tennessee more so than the defense, because if you come in as an offensive guy and your offense is atrocious, you know, you'll be back without a job pretty soon. So I think he would give up defensive help to kind of get his offense rolling. So that's the one destination I would kind of keep my eye on, is maybe you can get something out of Callahan in Tennessee. But I think most likely he probably stays put for at least a year.
I think the other spot, Danner has like teams of wide receiver need towards the back half of the first round, early second round, and with the space, I think Arizona wouldn't be a bad fit either. Now, T wouldn't be happy about that. I don't think he'd have to agree with that, because he'd have to sign the franchise tender before they trade him. But they're picking 27. They've got Houston's pick in the back end of the first round, so that would be a good space for the Bengals. But again, I just don't know what's going to happen. So we shall see. Briefly, we're just going to go over what the priorities are going to be for this offseason. And obviously, number one, T is the huge one. It's going to shape what the entire rest of the offseason, what the rest of it, it's going to do in terms of free agency and draft. So, but number two, I think the number two priority will be right tackle, to draft or to pick one free agency. I say both. What are your thoughts on the right tackle spot?
I have, as I'm sitting here, I have both written down as well. I do think that there's a very good shot that is the Bengals' first pick overall, or first overall pick in the draft for the Bengals. And then maybe it's just the draft and not necessarily a big, a decent free agent. It would be more of a lesser known guy. But I do think it'll be some combination of both, whether that's a little bit bigger free agent, a little bit later draft pick. I'm kind of leaning the other way. I think it's going to be a pretty early draft pick and then a little bit lesser of a free agent for right tackle. So, but I do think it'll be both, and I think it should be both.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, the problem is, as Bengals fans, we don't have faith in them drafting or signing one, just because their history is just so bad developing or bringing in the right guys. But again, this is a very heavy year in the draft for position players. I mean, the wide receiver group is strong. There's going to be a bunch of quarterbacks, and I'm not that high on the quarterbacks coming out. I'm not a quarterback guru, but there's going to be at least three of them gone before then. Possibly Penix could slip in before fourth. J.J. McCarthy being fifth. I think maybe two of those, three guys are legitimate first rounders, but I can see that many guys going. There's going to be quality guys on both sides of the line. Newton, I don't even know how to pronounce his first name, defensive tackle from Illinois. I would love to see that guy at number 18. He's huge. He provides good push in the passing game, besides being just an absolute size-wise, he's almost one-for-one replacement for DJ Reader. Now, you're not going to replace Reader savvy.
And
why not bring him back?
And Illinois guys have translated the last couple of years to the NFL just terrifically. Devin Witherspoon, Chase Brown. Yeah, I mean, there's more than just those two, but Illinois has just kind of churned them out the last couple of years.
Which is hilarious because, well, and Chase Brown's brother, for that matter.
Mm-hmm. Sidney.
He ran back a 100 yards. Was a punt return or a kickoff? Mm-hmm. I know he ran for a touchdown. I think it's the same week that Chase ran for a touchdown or something.
I think you're right.
Towards the latter end of the regular season. So, yeah, which is funny because Illinois is such a shit show of a program, but they've been turning out some players, so good for them.
Yeah.
Next list priorities, again, they need to figure out running back room and the tight end room. Obviously, we know Chase Brown's going to be back. Mixon, I quit trying to guess. I think he should be elsewhere, but I've been saying that for 2 years. But, you know, there's still the rest of that room to fill out. Chris Evans, there's no need for that guy to still be holding a roster spot because they have no faith in him. And Trevion Williams, useful player. I mean, he's done a decent job as a pass blocking option on passing downs, but this kind of goes with the tight end room. If you bring Drew Sample back, then right there you've got your H-back. I don't know if you want to consider him. And if you're going to have someone back there for pass blocking, why not use the best blocking tight end? He'll slip out and catch passes and showed a hell of a lot more athleticism than I thought anybody had, that any of us thought that he had coming back next year. So, but the tight end room, Bengals literally have nobody signed.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the tight end room, they'll take care of, that'll take care of itself. I mean, they're going to get, you know, all those guys signed. Tanner Hudson, it's not like these guys can, you know, Tanner Hudson can't go anywhere. Drew Sample.
He's an RFA.
Right, yeah. Drew Sample could potentially. I feel pretty good about him being back in a Bengals uni. The tight end room, to me, I would not be surprised after last year, which I'll say it again, greatest tight end draft in the history of the NFL. After last year doing nothing, I really don't see the Bengals doing anything here. I don't know why you would. You know, when you think about the tight ends you could have gotten the fifth round last year, or, you know, you're not going to now take that guy. You'll have to take him now in the second or third round to get him this year. I don't see the Bengals doing it. I think they've made their decision on tight ends. I just don't see them making a move. As far as running back goes, you know, I always like to look at Vegas odds and look at Vegas for some of this stuff. You know, the Bengals are fairly high on some free agent running back lists to sign people, which surprises me. I just – Derrick Henry and Saquon Barkley,
I've seen them predicted to sign Josh Jacobs.
I would be very surprised. I would be very surprised, but I would love to see it. Like you talked about, if we're going to go all in, you know, and you're going to have an all-in year, if you can sign Saquon Barkley or Josh Jacobs, I really don't want Derrick Henry. I just don't think he fits what the Bengals are trying to do offensively. But if you get Josh Jacobs, if you get Josh Jacobs or Saquon and you franchise T and you can manipulate the cap a little bit and bring in some D-line help. I mean, I know this is a lot we're saying, but if you can do those things and go all in, I mean, you can feel pretty good about the Bengals going into next year, having a real chance to do anything that they want to do.
I think Bengals are going to draft a tight end just because they're going to need to fill out that room, but it's going to be earliest around three pick, maybe like Cade Stover or something from Ohio State. It's going to be someone just because that's the easiest way to fill out a room without having to overpay. You get somebody on a rookie contract, as opposed to drafting for an impact player that they could have done at multiple junctures last offseason for that matter, much less, or, you know, in free agency, much less through the draft. So, next place and priorities that actually probably should be higher, but defensive line help. They need more depth at the edge. Starters aren't going anywhere as much as I advocated Sam Hubbard, having been a cap casualty, which is an easy place to free up some money and not lose a ton of actual impact. He's not going anywhere, but they need more depth. I'm still high on Miles Murphy. I think he's going to be fine. He's going to be a good player. but you need more guys either interior and on the edge. And defensive tackle, you need at least a starter, possibly two. Again, I think if you can move B.J. Hill into a rotational and not be the starting at D-tech, or even if he does, again, you need that Larry Ogunjobi to come in so that they can have a timeshare so he's not being worn down and he's a lot more impactful.
Yeah, and you're not talking about B.J. Hill playing one out of four plays or something. You know, it's just he can't play five out of every six plays. That's just – it's just too much. And I agree. I mean, so, like, my notes for here is lots of help need bodies. I mean, you just need bodies that are, you know, a little bit of quality. I would – if I'm the Bengals, I'm marking down I need at least three guys here and hope two of them work out. You need players here. And unfortunately, if you don't get – if you get players but you don't get – useful players. I mean, this could determine your whole season, in my opinion. I mean, they can't stop nothing if they don't shore up that D line, especially with, you know, how young the secondary is. And when you look at the secondary, what, you know, what you've got, the D line has to be, you know, has to be right. Because, you know, that's where you have experience and you have some good players. Having an inexperienced secondary, you can't put all the onus on them. The D-line has to start winning.
Yeah. B.J. Hill just did quick math. He played 71% of the snaps. It's just too much. I mean, he gets worn down, and the problem is no one behind him because Josh Tupou, Jay Tufele, and Zach Carter were just, I mean, worse than just guys. Like, these were barely road bumps, you know, barely speed bumps for the other team. I mean, they outside of the one stop that Zach Carter made against Minnesota on fourth down play,
yeah,
they singled him out. I mean, the entire run scheme for the other teams are, okay, 95's on the field. Let's run at that guy, and we're going to pick up 6-7 yards because he's going to absolutely – I mean, he's going to be pushed back into the second level of the defense. And linebackers won't even get – you know, linebackers aren't even going to get a chance to get their hands on him until they're that far down the field, so –
yeah, the rest of the league was looking at the Bengals going, they really think these guys are NFLers. And then they just continued to run it at them. So, yeah, totally agree.
Last spot that's on the priority is safety. And that's – I don't know if that's in terms of an outside addition or improvement from the guys in the room, because they've gotten guys, and I think we're both convinced that Jordan Battle, I don't see much friction from him. Is he going to finish with as high of his grade? I mean, he had an 82.5 grade as a rookie. Is he going to finish that high? Maybe not. But I think we're both convinced he's a legitimate guy. He's a starter-level player and an impact level at one safety. Dax Hill, again, the entire defensive staff, short of Rob Livingston, who, you know, was hired as defensive coordinator at Colorado, which actually he was the safeties coach, so it'd be interesting to see his replacement. So it was what Jordan Kovac, I think, was his replacement. Curious to see if he can help upgrade that play, whether it's, you know, I doubt that Nick Scott's going to be back, but if he is, you know, get better play from him and Dax Hill, whether he's an actual safety or needs to be moved to a different spot in the defensive backfield. They need better play. I think it's best if they bring in, you know, if they say goodbye to Nick Scott and bring in another veteran to – at the very least, give them a third option so they can play three safety looks, or, you know, worst case, take over for Dax Hill if they have to move him off the spot because he's unable to man it.
Yeah, I mean, like I like the what you said a couple weeks ago about, you know, if Von Bell becomes that cap casualty, that would just be terrific. I think the Nick Scott experiment in Cincinnati should and hopefully is over. Dax Hill, I think you still he still has a lot of versatility. So, you know, Mike Hilton going into the final year, I think there's a lot of places that he can still make himself useful. And he's still young. That was essentially his rookie year in my mind, because his first year in the NFL was basically, you know, just watch. And Jordan Battle, I think, is only going to continue to improve. Maybe his PFF number doesn't grow. But he's only going to continue to get better and better. Jordan Battle's a really smart football player. So I think the nice part is you have that one. You always want that really smart player back there. I think we have that with Jordan Battle. I think he's exactly what you want. There's a reason he was a three-time captain at Alabama. I think the secondary isn't as far away as it may seem at times when you factor in their youth. But, yeah, I think if you sprinkle in the right, you know, little magic dust, I think it can turn around pretty quickly back there, and Von Bell may just be that.
Yeah, and that's, again, like, this is obviously – I have no idea what – I don't think Carolina Panthers know what the Carolina Panthers
right.
do. So, who knows if he's going to be available. But it would make a lot of sense for them to move on because, again, they're starting over still. I guess they technically started over going into last year. But now they're starting over again with a new coach. But at least they have a quarterback. I think Bryce Young is a lot better than how he played. But – I still think there's a large likelihood that a lot of veterans that are signed the long-term deals, whether it's, whether these are guys that are on upside down contracts or not, I just think they're going to want to start fresh and just have it, guys that are bringing their own guys, not the Von Bell. I mean, Von Bell's like a one of a guy who's an organizational guy that's going to do things the right way. He's a leader, but as an older player, he's not an impact player per se. He's just a solid guy that you want on your team. I don't, who knows to see, if they want to move on from that, but I would love the Bengals to swoop in and sign him after the, if he's got after the draft or something like that, just for June, one of the June 1 or post June 1 cuts. So.
Yep, totally.
Only other position I didn't even list here on notes, but it obviously, and we mentioned it last, we were talking when we were ranking the players. Hunter, there's going to be, competition brought in, whether it's free agent like Punk God, now that he's legally out of any harmware or anything like that, everything was cleared up on that end, or bringing in another rookie. I think veteran's going to be the way that, not a veteran, but I don't think they're going to waste a draft pick on a punter 2 years in a row. So it'll be definitely free agent signing. But outside of that, any other position that you can think of that's a priority? They need to upgrade. They need to fix.
No, I mean, I think they need to continue to try to. Maybe the only other thing that I would think of is develop some depth on the, interior offensive line. You could think about trying to get some depth pieces, but that would be a nitpick to say. You've got to get it done this offseason. I don't feel that way. So. Yeah, but I do think punter, the punt god, would be terrific. I did see a report that potentially the Steelers are looking at him as well. So I would love to see the Bengals bring in some competition. I'm still not giving up on Brad Robbins yet. I still think there's a glimmer of hope that he may just turn things around. But I would definitely feel safe with an additional piece in the fold.
I mean, I'm just looking at the stats from the Super Bowl. Wisnowski, San Francisco's punter, 5 punts, 50.8 yards per, long of 55. So they were all 50, if you're averaging 51 yards a punt, your longs is only 55. That means they're consistently 48, 49, 50, in that range. Tommy Townsend, the punter for Kansas City, 5 punts, 50.8 yards as well, but the long is 62. That 62 yarder, holy smokes, man! He obliterated that.
Yeah. Well, and the punter for San Fran had the one that they downed on the one that I think was only a 45 yard punt that obviously his average would have been higher than it was than the 50.8. So, yeah, I mean, totally agree. The Bengals have not been on the plus side of that in a minute.
Yeah, and it's, it's just one of those spots to where I don't want to say it's an easy fix because it's not, but it's not one that requires, a total scheme change. You just need a guy who can punt, that can just punt the ball. I don't know. I would almost rather, because they drafted the guy that isn't the 55, 60-yard guy who's going to boom it downfield, but the guy that's going to, with the hang time, that's going to – cut down on
On returns.
That's on returns, yeah. Give me the guy who's going to kick it 65 yards downfield. So, yeah, the one by Wisnowski was 43-yarder down at the two. So that's, you know, that means every other one is the other four punts are between 52 and 55 yards. I mean, that's just unbelievable. So, outside of that, I mean, it's they're going to make a lot of moves. They'll obviously bring in guys for the defensive line, whether it's just depth moves or, you know, same thing for the offensive line, whether it's depth moves. Have until March 11th. That's March 11th at noon is when the whatever the hell you want to call it. It's when free agency opens, when guys, you know, when you can talk to other free agents. And by 12:02, pretty much everybody of note is off the board.
Yeah, which means there was no tampering, obviously.
Right, exactly. It's amazing how quickly you can make calls to agents and, you know, be in conversation with players in 2 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, because it takes me 2 minutes to answer the phone and then hit the speaker button so I can get it on speakerphone. I'm like, why isn't the speaker lighting up? So the fact that they can get these deals signed and agreed to in 2 minutes is incredible.
It's astounding. I mean, 2 years ago, Bengals signed Alex Kappa for the first move at like 12 o'clock and 30 seconds. So that's the quickest phone call. They just happened to be talking. They happened to be on the phone at like 11:59 talking to his agent about, you know, how's the weather in wherever the hell you were, or, you know, how's the family? Hope your wife's doing well. Oh, 12 o'clock. Oh, hey, your guy want to sign for this. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
And then quick send it. We're on the same page with the signing bonus. Yeah, we got this figured out. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's amazing. It's going to be right there within, like, instantaneous. But, yeah, and then free agency starts. New league year starts on the 13th at 4 p.m. That's when all the contracts can actually get signed, pen to paper, and deals be official. So, outside of that, you know, we shall see. Again, we're just waiting. We've got, next week on the 20th. So, next Tuesday is when the Bengals can start, and you'll see players get tagged. Be interesting to see around the league who gets tagged and who doesn't, just to see who's going to be available.
Yeah, true.
Even after that, you got a couple weeks to see who's, you know, before all of that is actually finalized. So, Greg, this is a short one for us by and large, but any final thoughts before we get out of here?
We are 8 days away from the first spring training baseball game. Is that unbelievable?
Pitchers
8 days.
Reported yesterday. I saw a video on social media today of just the line of pitchers, line of Reds pitchers throwing, and you just hear pop, 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 pop right down the line, catcher's mitts. And it's, again, we're a Bengals podcast, but baseball is my first love. Hearing that, an empty field and hearing the catcher's mitt pop, or hearing the crack of the bat when they're just having batting practice in front of an empty stadium, like that's audio porn for me right there. And it's just the greatest sound. After having a disappointing Bengals season, it's still winter for another month. Like, the weather's still kind of crappier. You know, we could get 3 feet of snow tomorrow. Who the hell knows? But summer's on its way. Thank God.
I'm ready for it. One final thing. I was reading an article talking about baseball, and the guy did his power rankings. He had the Dodgers number 2. I was like, is this guy
27 Eagles number 1?
No, he had the Braves. He had the Braves 1, which, whatever. But the Dodgers number 2, are you nuts?
Braves are a damn good team. Braves are an absolute damn good team, but you can't go against the Dodgers. They win 100 games every year.
Listen, when you spend $1.8 billion, I'm going to put you number 1. Okay, you go number 1 until proven otherwise. I mean,
absolutely.
What?
I mean,
crazy.
They'll piss that, you know, they'll piss their pants and pee down their leg in the playoffs anyway, but until that point, they're going to be number 1.
I'm still saying that guy's an idiot for saying they're number 2. I'm still saying it.
Exactly. Coming up next couple weeks, we're going to have some fun drafts. We're going to be doing a draft of, and actually, hey Greg, I'm telling you what we're going to do in the next couple weeks. All-time draft bust draft. Not just Bengals, but throughout the league. So Jamarcus Russell, Tony Mandarich, those guys all going to be on the table. We're going to have a lot of fun with this. So look forward for that. So outside of that, everyone, take care. We will see y'all next week.